You're very welcome back to the programme. Mayville native Adrian Harkin's campaign, Adrian's Legacy, the Summit to Sea for MND, involves a unique combination of paddling and climbing, symbolising the resilience required in the face of motor neurone disease. He's gathered together his kayaking community to raise awareness and fundraising for MND with an amazing challenge that's never been completed in Ireland ever. We're joined on the programme now by Jessica Harkin, daughter of Adrian. Thank you so much for joining us, Jessica. I really appreciate your time today.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks, Jessica. And Brian McDermott, a chef, of course, Chef Brian McDermott, and friend of Adrian. Hi, how are you getting on, Brian?
Good morning, Greg. Yeah, we're doing good. Thank you.
It's good to have on your programme. Good to have you on the programme. Jessica, how's Adrian doing?
He's doing good. His mind's busy now with the fundraiser, so it's keeping him distracted.
And this was all thrust on Adrian and you as a family very recently, really, isn't it? It's an awful lot to contend with, Jessica.
It is, yeah.
Why the focus on using his experience to take on this challenge?
He's just, he wouldn't do anything by a half. He always wants to do something, so he wants to give back what the Irish Motor Neurone Disease has given him. The association has been unbelievable towards us with everything that they've provided, for the house to equip for him, the eye gaze technology that he uses now to communicate with us. So he wants to give back and hopefully raise funds for them to research and hopefully find a cure or something to help with motor neurons disease for other people.
And indeed, and it's one of those organisations, isn't it, that until such time maybe as you have to engage with it. I think an awful lot has been done recently to raise awareness of MND and the supports, but you know, until recently you don't really often know about these amazing organisations until such time as we sadly have to call on them.
No, we didn't even know about it at the start. It was a friend that reached out to me and said, can I sign you up for it? And I said yeah, and only for her. We probably still wouldn't really know.
Yeah. Brian, this is a remarkable challenge. There's not many things left that kind of haven't been done before. Kind of fitting, I think, you know, given the Adrian's character, as Jessica's been mentioning.
Yeah, I think for those that don't know Adrian Harkin, he's a very determined man, and he's a strong, both in his build and as a character. And I would always put him in my kind of top five friends, Greg, that has a mind that is just so strong, so positive. And that is exactly it today, you know. And Adrian's not really very mobile at the moment. He can't talk. He needs it aided with, as Jessica mentioned, eye gaze technology. So when he decided he was going to communicate this challenge to us, firstly, the time delay, watching his face, trying to read his eyes, and then he comes out with it and says that he wants to do this, you're like, no. If it hasn't been done before, there's a reason why it hasn't been done before. So what he's done is he's reached out to his community of friends in the outdoor world and adventures. And they've come together from right across the island of Ireland. And really, that is the bones of what's putting this together and setting this up for the massive challenge that it is this Saturday.
Yes, we'll talk through the challenge. It's a dual aim, hasn't it, to raise awareness, which is critical. And we heard from Jessica, just by chance someone mentioned IMNDA to them in the early stages of their journey. But it's to raise awareness about motor neurone disease, the supports that are there. But also the second part, equally important, is to raise money for the association to continue its work, continue to develop and continue to spend in the area of research as well, Brian.
Yeah, and that's been very important for Adrian. He's, you know, he wants to leave a little bit of a legacy naturally. But second to that, it is the awareness. And Greg, people listening to this today, you know, from afar, they'll say, God, it is a horrible disease. And it is. I mean, we're talking here about an individual whose mind is so sharp as it always was. But the body, and, you know, you'll not mind me saying this, the body is literally crippling away in front of us. And I suppose it's only really 2 years ago, and just over 2 years ago, when you would have got a call from Adrian to say, come on, do you fancy going kayaking? You know, then calls kind of changed and they became calls of, look, there's someone here who's going to put in a ramp, you know, because they want to get themselves out of the house in the wheelchair. And all of what Adrian got in terms of aids, from wheelchairs to apparatuses being fixed and implemented into the house, You know, that has all come about through the Irish Motor Neuron Disease Association, who really came to the fore and said, look, what do you need? And they assess things because they know the disease. So we were looking at, I suppose, Adrian's current status as it was developing, but they knew what was coming down the line in a matter of months. So when something went into the house, you know, be it an apparatus, be it a lift, be it whatever it was, we thought, God, is this literally a bit too much here? Is it too high a spec? It wasn't, because the route that this disease takes and the aggressiveness of it, it meant that this kind of aid was there in place for Adrian and for the family to assist them, because, you know, there's two girls and Sharon, his wife, Kaylee and Jessica, we're speaking to. So it's not like, you know, they can decide all of a sudden they're going to be strong enough to lift their dads. And that, unfortunately, is what happened in this case.
Jessica, when you started to learn details, and we'll run through them in a moment, of what Adrian thought would be a fitting campaign, and it is somewhat to see for MND. Nothing about that surprised you, knowing your father so well, I'm sure, that the level of ambition for this project?
Not even slightly. And it didn't surprise me. It was supposed to just be the sea. And he just thought, no, that's not good enough. So he brought in the hills and the mountains then. Nothing surprises me with Daddy anymore at all.
And do you want to run through what's taking place, or Brian, whichever of the two of you, it's fine. Do you want to start, Jessica, as what's being planned over the days from the 20th of April?
So on the 20th of April, kayakers from all around Ireland is taking a section of the coastline each. And we all set off at the exact same time or thereabouts, and we all do our section, and it'll be live tracked on our GPS trackers on the website on the day. So hopefully you'll see all the dots starting to connect up. Now, we don't know what the weather's going to be like, but hopefully
it's looking good. Yeah, it's looking good and calm. So fingers crossed, the stars are aligning in that regard, it would seem.
Yeah. And then at the same time, then you have 32 people taking GPS trackers up the highest mountain in each county.
Do you think we don't trust you or something? So you'll get this visual, effectively, will you, of the whole country being encircled by kayakers? Yeah. Wow, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Okay, and as you say, you're involved in the kayaking side of it, Jessica, is that right?
I am, yeah.
Okay, and Brian, on behalf of your friend, to help get the word out and all that type of stuff, but are you taken to the mountains, taken to the sea?
That hasn't been decided, Greg. All I'll say to you is that Adrian got me into the first ever kayak about 10 years ago, and he said, we'll go for a midnight paddle. So Adrian being Adrian, I turned up with Culmore, and the paddle was the entire way down the Foyle to Moville, which took 3.5 hours. So the running joke ever since has been, I'm not listening to you anymore when you say it's a little kayak. So on Saturday, obviously, I'll be at the Hub, which is in these adventures at Moville. And we're opening that up to say to people, come down, because something's going to be tried here. And that is that we're going to physically try and get Adrian into a kayak. And for the latter stages of that, and you can imagine now what the challenge around that will be, given the condition.
But it's incredibly symbolic, isn't it, that he should be a part of it?
Well, as those dots come together and we're looking at a digital sense and we're seeing it being almost completed, I think the biggest gesture and the greatest dot of the day will be Adrian Harkin coming into Moville from the Foyle in a kayak, supported by his community and his friends. And that we expect to happen at around about 3 p.m. this Saturday, and it'll be a lovely occasion should it be completed.
Indeed, and it is the Summit to Sea for MND scheduled to take place on April 20th. Fingers crossed that should be fine, because there is high pressure coming in, but of course it's a big expanse of water we're talking as well. But there are other provisional dates earmarked 21st, 27th and 28th, but wouldn't it be great to get it all done in the 12 hours on the 20th? So what element of this, if not all of it, Jessica, has never been done before? Because effectively, as a relay, the country is going to be circumnavigated, and 32 summits to be reached as well. I suppose who would have taken it on before?
No one. The only person that will do it, and hopefully we complete it, is Daddy. It's too big of a challenge. Everybody else kind of would look at it and think, no.
It can't be done, but he's a can-do guy, and here we go.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so you have all the teams in place and all that kind of stuff. So really what we're at now is inviting people to support this event. As you mentioned, and I think this is a lovely element to it, Jessica, is there's trackers there. So that means people can get it, feel involved once they donate, and they can be a part of visualising this moment in history for such a great cause. The I Donate page is linked where, Jessica, often these links, when it's a donation page, can be too long to mention, I don't know. But if people want to throw a few bob behind this campaign, how do they do so?
So they can look up our website or our Facebook or Instagram, Summit to See for MND, and then the link will be there.
All right, okay. And Brian, you'd urge everyone who has a few quid to back these men and women around the country and around the sea who are going to be taking part in this. This so ambitious, it's brilliant.
Yeah, it is very ambitious, Greg, but it's right and it's fitting for Adrian to do something like this. And, you know, look, it's really saying to people, if you want and you can donate to this, we're going to do something here. We're setting a challenge, you know, and really, as you said, to live track it gives them a sense of, OK, you can feel and watch it being done. I think it's somewhat like the old knock on the door used to be of the sponsored walk style of, you know, fundraising. That is, you know, I'm looking for some money for the school, but I'm going to do something in return. And certainly this challenge is something in return. And weather is looking good. That's the important thing here. And if weather holds up the way that it is planned at the moment, this will get completed, you know, barring any disasters, which hopefully we won't come across. But to see it get completed, Greg, to have it done in Donegal, to have it done in Moville, and to Adrian to come in a kayak, in his own business and in his adventures, up the slipway, I think that's going to be a highly charged, emotional day, and it's one that we're certainly looking forward to as well.
Okay, and it's titled Adrian's Legacy, the Summit to See for MND. But in speaking to you, Jessica, it's clear that Adrian's legacy is already in very safe hands through you and his sister. I'm sure he's incredibly, incredibly proud of you. And thank you so very much for speaking to us today. And fingers crossed for April the 20th, and hope you get great support. And I'll look forward to donating and tracking your progress, Jessica.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Have a lovely day. Chef Brian McDermott, as always, thank you so very much indeed, and for helping us for those who aren't familiar with Adrian, and many of us are, to help us get to know your friend a little better as well ahead of this amazing challenge.
Thank you, Greg.
Right, take care of yourself. Goodbye. There is more Gaelic Games Championship chat on this Monday's DL Debate. Oisín Kelly and Páirc Hilferty will preview the Derry Donegal Ulster Championship quarter-final with former player John Gilday and Derry's 93 All-Ireland winning player and ex-senior manager Damien Cassidy. Well done if you managed to secure a ticket for that. All tickets through the clubs, it would seem. Some quirks of that system too, because if you're a club member in certain clubs anyway, you kind of get one ticket, and it's often two you just want to go to, maybe you and your partner. But anyway, how do you think that game's going to go? They're going to chat about it tonight, but obviously, you know, the fans, they've been to a lot of the games, watched a lot of the games, and, you know, I think it's generally accepted that Derry's going to be Donegal's biggest test, and I think a lot of people in the game are kind of writing Donegal off. But Jim McGuinness is Jim McGuinness for a reason. He's bound to have something under his sleeve. But Derry are so strong, aren't they? How do you think it's going to go? It's going to be a cracking game next weekend. Derry versus Donegal. Let us know if you want to talk about that. 086 60 25,000. But on the show tonight, you'll hear from Oisín and Páirc. They'll hear more from the Donegal camp ahead of the tie. That's all on the DL Debate, the championship in association with Sister Sarah's Live on Highland, Monday evening, 7.05. But tune in at 7 and get the news. The under-20s won at the weekend, fair play to them. Minors also successful as well. Hurlers, great start to the Nicky Record Cup. Hard-fought victory there, and I think the ladies lost out, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, lots to get through on that show tonight from 7:05 with Oisín. Best of luck to Adrian. Love to Sharon and the girls from the Deeney family in Rathmullen. Indeed. Does anyone know why there is no parking at St. Connell's for Eye Clinic? I'm here 1 hour. No cars moving. Don't know what the story is there. To be honest with you, anyone with an insight, please let us know. Disappointing to hear Donegal did not apply for the Heritage Grant. We're in and shown, so we're used to being left out. But the fact that the council did not apply puts a different focus on the subject. Fair play to councillors who've done their best, and thank you for airing my view. Hi, Greg. Would you ask candidates for elections who they are co-opting? And secondly, do they agree with co-opting? That comes in from Peg. Thank you very much indeed. In fact, we had a communication too from Councillor Frank McBurty, who and his message reads as follows. The Lifford Stranola MD formerly was part of the Letterkenny EA. This changed in 2009 when the Lifford EA was part of Letterkenny and was amalgamated with Stranola Ballybofey electoral area, which changed from a 3 to a 5-seater. It's now a 6-seater since 2014. Sinn Féin in this part of Donegal have co-opted 2 councillors in this electoral area when 2 sitting councillors stepped down in 2008 and 2013, and a 3rd is now stepping down and is not seeking re-election on the 7th of June 2024. Inch Island Wildfowl Reserve has a beautiful 8-kilometre circular walk and there are 3 toilets on it, which is great. Why can't other places of attraction within the county follow suit, for example, Mount Errigal? Indeed, okay. There's a very dangerous junction in Letterkenny Ward where the butcher shop used to be. Whoever designed that road should just come and stand there for a few hours to see how dangerous it is. It was a lot safer before the roadworks changed it. We're going to be talking about this a little later on the week, just waiting for the right people to be available, because it emerged last week that roads designers do not have access to information from Angus Síochána on road traffic collisions fatalities because of GDPR. They haven't had proper access to that since 2018, would you believe it? So they're expected to design roads and what have you with access to that type of information. It's something I wanted to talk about, but just waiting for the right people to be available to do so. That's during the week. Huge congratulations to Niamh Shevlin, our Donegal Rose 2024. You are already a star in our eyes. Love, Donal and Anne-Marie. I'm sure we'll be chatting to Niamh in the next wee while or so. Not today, perhaps, but certainly to recognise that achievement. Caller says that the Polestar roundabout is no longer a roundabout. It's a junction and should be treated as such. She witnessed a driver switching lanes and almost hitting another car and has seen this on multiple occasions. If people do not understand how to drive through a junction properly, people are even driving through the lights as roundabout rules apply. I get where you're coming from. I have to say, I also have to be very conscious that I only drive on that roundabout at times that I drive on it. But I've found it quite a good experience, to be honest with you. And I think the argument was made at the beginning that, you know, at least you know you will get through the traffic, which actually is the case. You know, it's quite encouraging in that regard. It's not perfect by any means, but it is a junction. And I think sometimes maybe those from outside the area who have not been on that junction since it changed are the ones that maybe struggle, because it is a little bit confusing. And I know now that I'm a little bit more used to it. I think it's grand, but I can imagine if you're going on it for the first time, there's no other junction like it in the county. So if you did your driving test in Dunloe or Buncrana or Donegal Town, and then your first driving experience as a fully qualified driver was to come onto the Polestar roundabout, there's nothing in your training would prepare you for it. It kind of is what's a little bit silly about the way we train people to drive. But anyway, we don't go on motorways, or we don't, you know what I mean? Stuff like, you're not really taught how to drive on a motorway. You just, you know, drive around Donegal Town, reverse into a road, do a hill start, and away you go. You're fit to drive wherever you want. And it doesn't really set you up for driving at night, driving in icy conditions, the Polestar roundabout, motorways, and so on and so forth. Okay, Margot's with me now. Hi, Margot.
Good morning, Craig. How are you?
Good, good, good. Right, cold calling. How do you define cold calling? Because you want it to be made a crime.
Yeah, I thought it actually should have been, or should be. If somebody coming to your door and offering services like tarmacking or cleaning roofs or painting or something, and it's so intimidating. You know, they arrive and they've got this bogus callers, obviously, is what I'm talking about, but also even with other company or other service, if you're reputable, you won't be going door to door.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be on either from family members or for plumbers, electricians, all of those. But it's the bogus callers is the big one.
Have they ever landed on your street, Margot?
No counter doors. Oh, they have, yeah.
Talk to me about the experience for those who haven't gone through. Because as you quite rightly pointed out, I think in your first contact with us, we've talked about this a couple of times now in the Garda slot, haven't we? And it's like, mm-hmm. if this happens, ring the guards. But you're saying it should be illegal to do it to begin with. So you talked about how intimidating it can be and stuff. Just remind us of what it's like.
Yeah. There's a man arrived in a van one evening, told me he'd come from Lifford. Now, I'm off a main road, off another road, if you know what I mean, really by road. Came down back road to our place, was really unusual. He wanted to do something with the roof offering to do all that sort of stuff. And I'm like, no, it doesn't need to be done. And trying to sort of, you know, and there's no point in saying you've no cash because they would take you to an ATM very gladly to take money out, which didn't happen to me, luckily enough. I sort of stood my ground and just told them no, that was it. But I just think if somebody was very vulnerable, it's not always the older people, you know, it could be somebody maybe having a bad day or whatever and just feel so intimidated by that, that bullying you to do something, you know. And I'm sure it isn't always, people don't always tell the guards after it's happened because they're probably embarrassed about it.
Yeah, and
that's
I think,
the other point as well.
Exactly. And I think too, something that actually I should have asked beforehand, if it's not illegal, why do we call the guards when it happens? Do you know what I mean? I think that would be interesting to get clarity on, Margot, because the guards wouldn't say get us involved for no reason. So is it the intimidation? Is it the sort of arm twisting? You know, what element is it of guard of business, if you know what I'm saying? Because they're not...
suspiciously, as they say.
But, right, okay. But yeah. I think it's definitely something I must get some clarity on that, because it might offer us a little bit more protection, I suppose, if we know what role the guards play when it happens. You know?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, but you believe it should be legal. I'd back you on that one, to be honest with you. I really would. Okay, listen, thanks very much for your time, Margot. I do appreciate it. A caller says, hi, Greg, I just wanted to highlight something, but maybe everyone else would know. I didn't until it happened to me. When I got my car insurance, I ripped off the disc at the green strip on the left, so the green strip was still attached to the letter, part of the insurance. I didn't know it wasn't valid to display the disc on the window without the green strip attached. I just never thought about it. My son then went to do his driving test in my car, and when the tester looked at the window, he said, I can't let you do your test because the insurance disc isn't valid. My son rang me in a panic, as if I wasn't nervous enough just before his driving test to tell me what happened. But my good luck, I had kept the letter in the glove box with the green strip attached. Wow, well done. So I told him to show it to him, but only by having the letter to show him, he wouldn't have been able to do the test that day. He did go on to pass the test, woohoo, but it could have been a fail. So I just wanted to let others know how simple it could happen. Thank you. Now, I had heard this... that your insurance disc wasn't valid unless the green strip was attached. But do you know when you hear something and you don't think, well, sure, what's the consequences of that going to be? So this person went, the son went for the test in the driving car. The tester, who's obviously very thorough, checked the car and said, right, there's no green strip. You don't really effectively have valid insurance. We can't do the test. Thankfully, lots of people do. The envelope... the letter was still in the glove box with the green strip still attached to it, but just a word of warning. As I said, I'd heard about that. I just kind of never seen it enforced. Hi, Greg. Just on the insurance disc issue, my niece went for her test with the same guy who had failed her the time before. And the night before her test, she put in her new disc, which was starting the day after the test. She thought that she was doing the right thing, but unfortunately he failed her straight away because she didn't have the old disc on display still. She was inconsolable. Should this not be like if you're stopped by the guards, you're given a certain time limit to show the correct disc, especially as he had seen the disc on the previous test? It's a toughie. I mean, how could you not have full sympathy for your daughter and she thought she was doing the right thing? Brand new disc. Why do you have it if it's not, and all that kind of stuff? The car is insured. It's not like there's a window where the car's not insured. But then, I suppose, the tester, you know, you could get someone that videos it and goes, oh, look at this fella doing a test in this car and the insurance is out of date. Or this woman, do you know what I mean? I'm not saying, I don't know if it's a man or woman. So kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't, aren't you? It's a difficult one. As a driver of the Milford-Cranford Road regularly, I wish to acknowledge the Trojan work done by the people of Cranford who cleaned up on Saturday. I hope that those who litter think twice now. The community did Trojan work. The road was an eyesore before this. Fair play. Just motorists respect what other people are doing. It's concerning, says the listener, that the whole world is standing back, that old men in charge don't seem to care, that the whole thing could get out of control and millions of lives lost and the world poisoned with nuclear. Well, listen, hopefully it won't come to that. Who knows what's driving these people to do what they do? There's awful atrocities happening around the world. You'd be very familiar with the conversation about Gaza and the generally accepted genocide that's happening there. Masses of people displaced, starvation. You'd be familiar with what's happening maybe to a lesser extent in Yemen. You would also be very familiar with what's happening in Ukraine. We get updates every night, power plants being destroyed, They're running out of weapons to actually protect themselves. 2024 is going to be, I was going to say interesting, that's the wrong word. It's going to be a critical year in the war that's taking place in Ukraine. But there's awful things happening in other parts of the world that for some reason aren't often talked about, or maybe people aren't actually aware of the scale of what's happening. We're going to do a little bit in a while to sort of show that that's the case. Okay, a regular feature on this program is Monday's Focus. Monday Focus. And what we're going to talk about is a situation in a part of the world that has seen, and this is according to United Nations agencies, and we'll tease the figures out a little bit more or question them if need questioning. More than 8.6 million people have been forced out of their homes. 25 million human beings are in dire need of humanitarian assistance. 18 million people are facing severe hunger. 5 million of them are at emergency levels, so the equivalent to the entire population of Ireland, bar the shouting. 3.5 million children under the age of 5, that's every seventh child, has acute malnutrition. And the one figure that I don't have to hand is the death toll. And we are talking about Sudan. There's a Sudanese Lives Matter event taking place on the 20th of April. It's at the Community Centre in Letterkenny. It's from 7 to 10 p.m. And it's to bring the forgotten war in Sudan to the spotlight. And we're joined by two guests in studio to discuss this. Saweba Ahmed, a Sudanese-Irish and also local election candidate for Letterkenny Milford for this year in June. Saweba, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
I really appreciate it. And we're also joined in studio by Dr. Hisham Hagana. Thank you very much for joining us. I do appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
So I went through a couple of figures there, statistics. We're talking about human beings here. The situation, Doctor, in Sudan is on a scale that we're not seeing anywhere else in the world. What's happening?
My name is Hisham. I'm a doctor locally here in Letterkenny University Hospital. The situation on the ground back home, Sudan, is really very bad. Basically, the country initially before the war, we weren't being in a position to be to have a nice, well-established, powerful healthcare system. On top of war, and this war unfortunately has been started in the capital of Sudan, which is Khartoum, where is the main health service facilities available in the capital, as every country like. And since then, since the war has been started in the war in the capital, we lost everything from our medical resources, factories, related medications, and big laboratories and big hospitals and all this kind of healthcare facilities helping the Sudan. Then we lost the major part of our health background back home. Then in addition of the war, which is everybody's got scared and everybody is looking for peace, most of our people, including doctors, they left the capital. And unfortunately, the capital left alone with two military sides fighting each other, closer to the knees, and the poor, just the poor people who are vulnerable for the war injuries involving bullet, blast, and etc. And there is zero resources. And the thing, I think, whatever we are getting, like humanitarian or medical support from outside, it's really not enough.
And doctor, you know, there's not a hierarchy of terrible situations around the world, okay? Things, we know that the awful situation facing the Palestinian people. We know what's happening in Ukraine. To a lesser extent, you know, we know what's happening in Yemen, okay? But unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be any interest as to what's happening in Sudan, i.e. it very rarely makes the news. For some reason, are those that feed us news, and that's what they do, aren't interested in the situation affecting the Sudanese people. Firstly, that must be very upsetting or frustrating. But is there a reason for that in your view?
Actually, in my view, this war is a bit complicated because between two Sudanese parties. And no one of them would like to show the bad side of him to the news. And also there is some struggles for the news and the representative to be into the capital easily. Like, for example, any part would show the positive thing. That's the major problem. The second thing, I don't think Sudan would be an effective country in the world, and etc. If you come to Europe, if you make a comparison between Ukraine war and Sudanese war, which is Sudan war now continuing for nearly more than today, we reached the anniversary date. The war basically has been started on 15th of April, 2023.
Okay, and I will come back to you because I have spoken on a number of occasions about this to Suiba Ahmed, and you know, so much has changed in the world since we had this first conversation, but yet this war continues affecting the Sudanese people. I gave some information there as to how it's affecting people. The terrible impact it's having on children, and I imagine women as well. They seem to be the greatest victims of war. Suiba, it must be very difficult to continue to watch on as the world seemingly watches on to this horrific situation.
It's really heartbreaking what is happening, and you know, Sudan not being on the media, not being making news. It is the same suffering as Gaza, you know. And just I want to add that in the event we have advocacy for Gaza as well, being a supporter for Gaza since I was at the primary school, and maybe people from my country as well. It is indescribable, the suffering in Sudan. And it's not only them and the displaced. Even the people outside Sudan are in stress, just like ourselves. We need to care for our families, neighbors, friends, and everybody. People are stressed about, you know, taking care of them. You know, my family is literally displaced and they are in Cairo. I'm looking after 14 people in my country. You can imagine all the Sudanese around the world not getting the help, not getting...
Did you say you're looking after them?
Yes.
So you're financially supporting them from here as best you can?
Yeah, 14 members, very close, siblings, nephews, nieces. And I can.
So you're their lifeline?
I am.
Yeah.
And many Sudanese are the same, like myself, the under stress. And because they are not getting that humanitarian aid, we deserve it. I'm really wondering what's happening.
But why is the world watching on again? And I know I asked the question of Dr. Hisham, but again, why is the world just watching on? Where is the calls for to bring the parties around a table? Where is the external pressures to try and force them? You know, because the big conversation at the moment is the Middle East. It's the civilians of the Middle East. Let's protect them, and rightly so. But why aren't we hearing the same of the Sudanese?
It's unfortunately, and I need to say that, there is lots of regional and international interest in Sudan. Sudan is a rich country. And when it is in that mess, when it is in this situation, it is easier to take, you know, your piece of cake. There is some areas with the resources in Sudan, and people are working over there. And it was just, the country was draining outside Sudan, people living in very difficult situation because of the political instability. And that will benefit the people who are taking the resources and who are trading, of course, with the help of the locals and the politician and the corrupt in the country for decades, you know. And this is my explanation. I don't want to say that they don't, you know, feel that it counts. It is the same. And I name this event Sudanese Life Matter because It is the same killing. It is the same loss of lives. It is the same suffering and displacement.
Well, a Sudanese, I'm really wondering. A Sudanese baby or child is as important as an Irish baby, as a Ukrainian baby, as a Palestinian child.
Yeah, I'm wondering, why is this? I don't just want to call it racism yet. It's just like regional or international interest.
But there's a saying, of course, if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's often a duck, if you know what I mean. And you just wonder maybe if that is a factor.
Yeah.
Okay, we're joined by a couple of other guests as well, and I'll come back to you two, of course. Hopefully I am correct in my pronunciation. I hope I'll be corrected very quickly if I'm wrong. Malaz, good morning to you.
That is correct. Okay. You pronounced it correctly.
Malaz, you are you're living in Letterkenny. You're remotely working in the UK, is that it? But you're based here in Letterkenny.
Most of my life in Letterkenny, to be honest. It's just now I'm working in the UK, but I do come.
Okay, the signal is absolutely brutal. It will pick up, but I'll tell you, I'll come back to you as your signal recovers. It's not your fault. Rugaya is with us as well, who is Malaz's sister, I believe. I suppose, do you want to add anything to what we've already been hearing as to your sort of assessment of what's happening in your home country?
Yes, yes, of course. I live in Letterkenny since more than 10 years ago. And I am an Irish citizen myself. And I'm a mother for two children who are also been born in Ireland and are both Irish. I am married to a Sudanese guy, of course, and he is not living with us because I know, like, Ireland, the visa story and all that, it's not that easy. You need some specific requirements and stuff. You need to be working in the country for a specific time and specific salary. I did work, but I was working in the north. I'm a scientist. I work in pharmaceutical labs. Well, I used to. At the moment, I'm not working due to my children. Since the war started, I've been trying to bring my husband here since a long time ago, but I couldn't. It wasn't easy. And after the war, it even got worse because we got more scared. We got more worried about him, me and his kids, of course. And I tried, actually, to make a call and bring him here. I spoke to the justice. I emailed them, and they actually did reply me. They did talk to me. They tried, but I think it wasn't also easy. I don't know. They told me that I have to they told me to send all the documents and everything, and I did. And after sending all my documents, they told me that I have to get a letter from them to allow my husband to come to Ireland to meet his Irish kids and to be safe with us. But I don't know what went wrong. It didn't happen, unfortunately. I really respect the Irish law, definitely. But also, I feel sad for me and for my kids that we can't be with their father.
So, of course, the family is parted, which in and of itself is difficult enough. Do you fear for his safety
And
what's his situation?
So at the start, his situation was very difficult. He was in Sudan, and his place was the worst. It was in the middle of Khartoum. He was in a place called Nimrathnain, which is the worst place when the war started. And definitely he had to go to some of the villages to be safe over there. But definitely the situation is miserable. It's not that easy. And he's also got some sickness. He has some medication that he has to take rapidly. And due to the war, the medicines are not coming to Sudan very easily. Over there, there's a problem and lack of medicines. So I think this is a very, very difficult situation. And definitely me and my kids, we cannot go to Sudan. That's impossible.
Okay.
This is for the safety of my children. And he can't come here. I just don't know what can we do. It's very hard, very difficult. it's out of our hands, to be honest.
All right, Gaia. I hope things get sorted for you soon. Yes. Thanks very much indeed for joining us. I just hope that my connection to Malaz has improved. So that's much better. I mean, you know what? Obviously, it's awful being in a country in this situation. I think also too, it's incredibly difficult to watch on helpless. I don't know if you'd call it survivor's guilt or something either. Do you know what I mean? But it must be very difficult to see your people going through what they're going through.
It is the worst feeling. I don't think anybody can imagine how we feel. Just imagine you have to go with your day, basically wake up, go to your work and everything, do whatever you have to do as a normal day. But in the back of your heart, in the back of your mind, you have families who are passing away, dying, getting killed, displaced, actually hungry. Actually, in Sudan currently, there's a starvation hitting where around 200,000 kids were hit, actually headed with starvation and presumably going to die due to that. And more than 700,000 presumed within a year. So if you imagine, this is a big, big thing, but nobody really speaks about it. And just an incident that happened to me in the UK, where someone was talking about where I'm from, and I mentioned I'm from Sudan. And they were like, I heard some things about it in the news. But if we compare, Sudan is worse than the two wars that are currently happening between Gaza and Israel and also in Ukraine. We lost more than any one of them. But I do respect, and I do, of course, suffer with the Palestinians as well and the Ukrainians, but we are there too. I've lost so many family members. I've lost one of my cousins who really died in a tragical way. He was only in his early 30s. It's a shock for us. I cannot sleep at night. If you ask my sister, she is worried every night that she will get a call that her husband, something happened to him, or a family member of mine has passed away or got hurt. And as Thuwaiba has mentioned, that we are supporting our families. Every Sudanese person is trying their best to send money back home for financial aid, food, clothes, and so on. I've got some family. I am a 26-year-old myself. I am supporting my auntie, who's currently living in Egypt with her daughter. So it's not easy. It's not easy. And the guilt. You have that guilt. When I have a full meal, that I have all the options I can have, I just feel guilty that I have this and my family don't. It's not easy. And no matter what I speak, it's never going to fulfill what I actually feel, to be honest.
Malaz, thank you so much for giving us the insight. I genuinely I do appreciate it. Dr. Hisham, on this event at the community centre on the 20th of April from 7 to 10 p.m., you want to bring the forgotten war in Sudan to the spotlight. Obviously, you're incredibly well-researched in this regard, and it's a good opportunity, isn't it, for you to be able to share that information with those who maybe don't fully get what's going on?
Oh, yeah. I have to tell this story. Basically, the war has started on 15th of April, and when we got nothing, especially in the doctor personnel and very lack of medical supplies, and people left alone without suturing and died on the street and in the beginning of the war. And then one of my colleagues who started working in the main hospital back home, it's called a new hospital. He had starting working together with fresh graduate PREF doctors, and they managed to open the major theater, and they start fixing the wound and doing surgeries and saving life on the ground. Unfortunately, this doctor he had some circumstances that led him to leave the capital without any surgeon left behind. My basic training in general surgery since back home, and I have good, and thankfully I got a good experience here. I'm living in Irish community. I got a good experience in the Irish hospital. I took my part, and then I was very close to this guy, and then I spoke to him. We did arrangement for me to arrive to this hospital in order to keep the surgical operation going on during the war and save as many as we can from our beloved people. So then I have decided to go back home volunteering for my people. That was in June 2023. The journey was from here, definitely Letterkenny is my town now. And then the main question will be coming to everyone who's from the audience would be why you have selected this way to precisely to go back to home doing it more. And my answer would be I know I need to be there. That's what I felt, and I felt the urge to help those people who are helpless at that time. And then I took my car from Letterkenny to Dublin Airport. During the way, I was in contact with a couple of people because the travel was very complicated and nearly impossible to reach Sudan because they have closed the airspace areas, and then there is no direct plane to...
But you got there in the end.
I got there, from Letterkenny to Dublin, and then I took a flight from Dublin Airport, flew to Egypt, Cairo, and then from Cairo, connection, then to Addis Ababa, to the capital of Ethiopia, and then from Ethiopia through the ground, like with cars, and
The journey as difficult is dangerous. Also,
it's kind of.
And you know, unfortunately, time has caught up with us, Doctor. And my apologies. I think people, if they attend this event, will be able to learn much more about that. And I think too, what you witnessed when you arrived there, because I get the sense that even though you might have been prepared, you couldn't have been fully prepared for what you saw when you returned. But for now, unfortunately, I'm going to have to end the program. Dr. Hisham Hagana, thank you so very much indeed for coming up to us.
My pleasure.
Okay. And also, of course, we were also joined on the program by Sawiba Ahmed, Sudanese-Irish, of course, and local election candidate for Letterkenny Milford 2024. Thank you for helping us to discuss this issue.
And to assure the people to join us and to do something, and their kindness with the response to the Ukrainian and to the people in Gaza. We are looking for the same kindness, you know, to join us and donate for humanitarian aid for Sudan.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed, both of you. And thanks to our guests that joined us remotely. We hopefully next time we return to this, we'll have a little more time, but we're back with you tomorrow morning at 9:00.